Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Many of us in the pro-life movement have a sense of this over the last 10 or 15 years, but it's nice to see it actually recognized and in places no less than the Atlantic, where there's a new face being noticed for the pro-life movement. That face is not, as we've often been told, the face of old white men, but very often of young, much younger women, and not just religious types, but also secular pro-life activists. It's found on campuses. It's found elsewhere. It's found, well, once a year, marching on the Mall in Washington, D.C. in defense of the unborn. We're going to talk about the future of pro-life activism. Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 12th, Tina Whittington, Executive Vice President of Students for Life of America. Tina, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd. I'm excited to be a part of this.
What's the biggest myth you usually have to respond to when it comes to the pro-life movement today?
I would say when I'm out on college campuses, the biggest myth is that we have this position because we're religious. I think that is one of the biggest ones that we face. A lot of times people think, oh, it's because you're a Christian or because the Bible says, which can put up roadblocks because we have an actual really great philosophical and scientific reasoning for our pro-life position. So that's definitely one of the things that we face when you're talking to students. I think one of the other big myths of who we are is that we're extremists or we don't care about women or we're, you know, all old white men. There's sort of this caricature that's been painted through the years of who we are. And one thing that this pro-life generation is really showing people is that that's not who we are. We aren't this caricature. We're not this one framed type person, but yes, we are against abortion. But we're also for women, and I think that's a powerful message that's really resonating right now. And it's difficult because, you know, the pro-life movement has always cared about women. I've been doing this for 18 years, and 18 years ago we cared about women just as much as we care now. I just think that we're more effective at communicating it, and we're more ready to talk about women and how abortion affects women because of awesome ministries like Silent No More. Women are having a platform to talk about their abortions and their abortion experience, where 18 years ago, that just wasn't happening. And so I just think we're in a new place, and it's exciting.
Slate had a piece by Ruth Graham, The New Culture of Life, describing the changing face, or at least maybe the media finally catching on to the changed face of the pro-life movement. Do you think it was a fair characterization?
I think, you know, there were some things that I didn't enjoy about the article. It's hard when you interview with a media source that's definitely not on your side. There's always a risk you take, right? Because you don't know what's that thing they're going to cut in your interview in such a way, or what are they going to put you before or after. You just don't know. But one of the things that maybe wasn't fair enough is that we are where we are right now as a pro-life movement because we have built our platform and our words and our outreach on the shoulders of heroes that came before us. And maybe that is what was not fair about the article, is that there have been some awesome pro-life heroes who have made headway that has brought us to the place where we are now. They maybe used different strategies, different messages and methods than what we use now or what's effective now. But you look at, like, gosh, abortion's been legal for 40 years. We're talking four decades of people. The generations are so vastly different that we had to change strategies. We have to change methods. It's a totally different conversation. I'm sort of old for Students for Life. I'm actually a Gen Xer, so don't tell anybody. But when I was on campus and pro-life outreach was happening, you know, you'd see, like, abortion victim imagery. and students would like stop because, you know what, I never saw pictures of ultrasounds. I didn't know what the baby in the womb looked like. And now most people know. It's interesting, but most millennials have seen ultrasound images. Look at Facebook and how that has changed the conversation. People get pregnant, and immediately what pops up in their newsfeed, they show a picture of the ultrasound of their baby and celebrate it. And so there's just a different kind of basis for beginning when you're talking about the pro-life issue now. And that's what I point out in the article. There's like this nuance where people now, you know, young people acknowledge that that's a human being. And so when I was in college, I didn't know, honestly, that it was a human being. I wasn't raised in a pro-life home, so I just didn't know these things. And so when I saw the Leonard Nilsen pictures, it was a shock to me because pregnancy was always this sort of fuzzy thing where students now in college, they have an idea and they understand what the baby looks like in utero and that it's a human being. And so it's this more nuanced conversation and it's capturing them this sort of earbud society where everyone is so plugged in to their technology, you've got to figure out how do we stop them, engage them in conversation. And it's a nuanced conversation because they're struggling with the social justice to the woman. And so they recognize there's a human being there. But a lot of young people really struggle with this idea of, well, but what's fair for that woman in a crisis pregnancy? And so how you approach them and how you talk to them and wake them up to the fact that abortion ends the life of an innocent human being and ultimately doesn't help that woman. It doesn't help her at all. And how the abortion industry has actually preyed on her crisis to the tune of $700 a pop every time a woman goes into Planned Parenthood. They're looking at her with a price tag on her head. If I can sell her an abortion, then I've made money off of her crisis. And so changing that conversation and waking up this generation is just so different than what it was, like I said, when I was in college. So I hope that, like, it's a good, fair assessment. I don't know where you're at in the pro-life movement and what you've done yourself, but or if you've seen some of the changes that have happened.
Oh, many of them, indeed. One of the things that I was intrigued by in the Slate piece was that, and it goes to what you said at the very beginning, one of those biggest myths is that the pro-life movement is purely a religious movement. It is more secular than it was before. Does that present a side challenge? One of the things that the piece highlighted was that sometimes on-campus pro-life groups will get involved in issues like the LGBT issue that aren't strictly speaking life issues and that they may alienate some of the more secular pro-life students.
So we were started in 2006 as a full-time organization by a group of Catholic students, and they purposed for our organization to be secular. And they did that for, I'm sure, many reasons, but one of the reasons is that sometimes when we come on and we are religious, even if we are personally religious, you know, if we come on as an organization and are religious, it creates barriers for other people to want to talk to us. But also, like the article was saying, it can create these sort of side issues. And for us, you know, there are other organizations on campus. There's focuses on campuses. There's Crew. There's all kinds of other organizations that focus on the gospel and, you know, reaching people with the message of Jesus. But if there's no one on campus who's specifically focused on talking about abortion, guess what? No one's going to do it because it's not fun. It's not popular, you know, even though we know that the majority of millennials believe that all or most abortion should be illegal, it's still hard because you're dealing with a campus administration that's probably very pro-choice. You're dealing with professors who are probably very much pro-choice. And so there's just a cultural situation on campus where to be secular, like we've decided to be, just reduces the walls that go up amongst people, but also because we've said, hey, if you're pro-life, you have a place at the table. And that might be a little controversial for some people, but it's helped us because we had a group in Alaska that the president of the group was Muslim. We have atheists, agnostics, you know, Catholics, non-Catholic Christians, Jewish people. Like, for us, you know, we know that the pro-life message is a unifying message because it's a message of the value of human life. It's a message of human rights, and it's something that resonates across the board. And all that to say, you know, obviously my faith instructs me and shapes me and gives me passion for this mission, but that doesn't mean that it excludes other people who are coming from different belief systems.
Talk about the shift in the age as well. One of those myths is that it's old white men. Mm-hmm. And the biggest mythical part there is that it's old. I think the pro-life movement is a nice split between men and women, but that it's getting younger. How would you make the case that the pro-life movement is growing younger?
Come to the March for Life in January and take a look around. You'll see thousands and thousands of young people. It just keeps coming forward that this next generation is always more pro-life than their grandparents' generation. We're more pro-life now than we ever were. And I think, like I said, this is a social justice-focused generation. They want to see equality and fairness, and they want to see it applied across the board. The problem is that some of them have to be led a little bit through philosophy, through science, to show that that includes that preborn child. But once they see that, they're all in.
What advice would you give to someone who's on campus? They're pro-life. Maybe they're just freshmen. They've been pro-life. Maybe they've even been to one of those marches, one of those pro-life marches. Mm-hmm. They get there and they just find the secular university so intimidating. They see all the different points of view and they say, wow, maybe there's no place here on this campus for my views on protecting the unborn. What would your advice be for them?
I would say reach out to your regional coordinator at studentsforlife.org and ask them to help you, because our regional coordinators are our on-the-ground help for students. They live in the region in which they serve. They will come onto campus with you. They will help you recruit people. They will help you work through the process of getting a group started, and they will plug you in with the resources in your community. The thing is that you're not alone, and that's what I love about the pro-life, you know, mission field, is that there are those of us who are on campus. There's those of us who are running maternity homes, pregnancy help centers, people lobbying at their state capitals. There's all these organizations that can surround a student and give them resources and support. But you know what? They just might not know it yet. And so if they reach out to the regional coordinator, they can give them the tools they need to affect their campus, help them recruit, and then get them plugged in with the resources within their own community. Because it's not just one person on a campus. It might feel like that sometimes for some students, like I'm just the only pro-life person here. But what happens is that they say something or do something or they table, and other students go, oh, wow, I thought I was the only pro-life person here. And, you know, when you start to be a voice, you attract those other people that maybe thought the same thing. We have a campus group at Williams College in Massachusetts. I can't remember how many students it is right now. It might be 7. And I was on that campus a couple years ago, and I was like, are you guys like the only 7 pro-life people here? Because we did the human rights tour where we talked about when do human rights begin, and there was a lot of animosity and people dialogue and struggling through acknowledging, you know, the preborn person as a human that should get human rights. And I just thought that they were such strong students, but it took one of them to find those other 6. One of them that was willing to stand up and say something and get a group started. And if she hadn't, then that group wouldn't have formed. They wouldn't have been, you know, converting other people to our pro-life position. So it might seem scary and you might feel like you're the only one, but I guarantee you, you are not.
Tina Whittington is Executive Vice President of Students for Life of America. You'll find a link to Students for Life of America at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Tina, thanks and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on, Todd.
In hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we have 2 kind of unusual texts as we look forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary. The first one is that odd account of Jacob wrestling with God. And the second one, a parable told by Jesus about the persistent widow. We'll get into all of them and the proper surrounding them with Dr. Carl Fikancher right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.